Hi, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Charlotte.
And this is Suspicious
or Delicious.
We're your audio aunts from Aotearoa, serving up questionable food, weird history, and a bit of profanity on the side. So this podcast might not be suitable for ankle biters. Let's dig in. Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm doing much better, as we've already discussed. And to our dear listeners, I have just had COVID again for the second time. So
it's bullshit.
It's fucking so ridiculous how long it like lasts and like lingers in your bod.
Yes. And then you went to Disturbed once you were better.
And then I went to
Disturbed. So your throat's had a double whammy. It's had coughing and growling.
Yeah, it went to Blink 182. Throat went to Blink 182. Then throat got sick for 2 weeks. Then throat went to Disturbed. So we've really just bookended some great gigs on the end in front of my sickness.
Your COVID but I was is well the filling down with the in sickness. A gig aria.
So I, yeah, no.
You're down with the sickness. But she's better now. And that's what matters. So that's why we've had a wee gap, is because Charlotte was laid up like a Victorian lady with consumption. She actually needed to go to the seaside for her health.
I well and truly did. I needed some fresh, cool air, that sea, salty breeze. Oh, what a dream. But I'm going to try really, really hard not to cough at all through this episode. And if I do, I'm going to cut them out anyway so you won't hear them. So ha ha ha. Yay for editing.
I was just going to leave them in. It's the realism. It's the authenticity. But she's got her tea. So I think we'll be okay.
We've got tea. We've got biscuits. As per usual, I bought Jamie some. What did I buy you?
You brought me a Finny. I've had a bit of a crappy week, also fell on my head late last week, so I've been a bit blah. But she bought me little rainbow gummy octopuses and Cornados, which I've never seen, but I'm very excited about.
Yeah, they look like little tornadoes. I know that these aren't new. They're not new. I've seen them. I've just never had them before. And I was like, you know what? These are down at my local dairy. We're going to eat some cheese tornadoes.
They look delightful. So we're gonna try some of those as well.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm so excited. You're excited.
I'm very excited.
But to dive right into our next episode, I'm going to be telling you all about the trickiest foods to make. Now, I know that's very general. That I'm saying that and I'm like, that's very general. The trickiest foods to make, according to like all the research I could possibly do online. Like, and now I understand anyone listening that you're going to be like, but I find this really tricky and that's not tricky, and this is it's a generalized kind of,
this is like a,
this is what chefs
and the general populace by statistics say.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like, and I've sort of put in some things that are like tricky to make according to sort of like chefs and kitchen hands and just like food writers and all of that sort of stuff, bloggers and stuff. But then I've also popped in some things that are kind of like a little bit more like sort of you're more, I want to say more simple stuff, but kind of like a good mashed potato.
Oh, you know what so I mean? Like anyone can make it, but it's hard to make it amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's get stuck in right now.
Please tell me a story.
So first up, the things that I wanted to talk about, and again, just depending on your cooking and your skills, foods and dishes that are often tricky to get right. And the first one is sushi.
Sushi.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you've got to do stuff with the rice when you make sushi.
You do. Yeah. And I don't know. Do you even eat sushi?
Not often, but I do.
Yeah. Okay. I couldn't even, for some reason I had a mind blank and I was like, does Jamie eat sushi?
I eat sushi. I don't buy my lunch or anything a lot.
Yeah, no, neither.
And it's not really something I make. Like, I have made it at home, but it's not one of my go-to things.
Yeah, no, I totally get that too. And it's not something I make that often either. Like, I've had a sushi kit before, but it really comes down to sort of like rolling the perfect piece of seaweed, rolling the perfectly prepared cold sticky rice
with the vinegar and with the sugar
mixture.
And
exactly, yeah. There's like a really specific mixture, and I swear some places get it so right, and some places it's like you're eating a sweet dessert rice with fish.
It's just gross,
and I'm just like, this just doesn't taste great. Like the vinegar's too vinegary, or the rice is too sugary, and I'm just like, I just can't. Anyway, it's also just about like the really fresh ingredients as well. Yeah. So like the fresh fish, the fresh chicken, fresh tuna, fresh vegetarian veggies, whatever you're chucking in there.
It's fresh because it's not got a lot to hide it if it's not.
Exactly. It's such a simple, perfect dish.
That's cough number one, folks. I'm going to count them.
We're 5 minutes in. I think that's actually pretty good for me. But yeah, I've made sushi before and it has tasted like crap. Like it's just compared to sort of like just literally any professional person making sushi, it was crap. But yeah, I think sushi and sort of from what I read on the internet, sushi is quite the art form.
Yeah.
And I agree with that.
That tracks. I believe that.
Mm.
Yeah.
The next one I wanted to talk about, the next tricky food is, the next tricky food is French macarons.
Okay. Now, yeah. That seems hard.
Yeah. They are hard. So, what did I write down on my little notes? Basically, Pierre Hermès. I think it's Hermès.
Wait, where are you looking?
Pierre Hermès, the godfather of meringues, recommends an Italian meringue method where you pour boiling hot sugary syrup gently into already beaten egg whites until they're shiny and pillowy.
I can't do that.
It sounds hard. That and it sounds, is.
Just the words boiling sugar.
I know. I'm like, wait, what?
I can't be trusted with that.
I know. It's ridiculous.
I burnt myself making relish on Friday.
Yeah.
Thursday. I burnt myself making relish on Thursday. But I can't be trusted with boiling sugar. Let's not be silly.
I know. Boiling sugar sounds really dangerous.
Dangerous.
Doesn't it?
It sounds like it's going to land on you and then stick to you while it burns you so you can't get it off.
And sear a hole in your skin.
And just, like, make a permanent clump of burn.
Yeah, burn. And just get stuck burn. In your hair. Get stuck in your arm hairs or something.
Yeah.
And it's like a home wax job.
And then it's just, like, ripping your skin off. It sounds horrible. It's giving me, like, House of Wax vibes.
These are French macarons, everyone, just FYI.
I can also make anything a horror movie.
I feel like I dove right in because I got excited about this little piece of the godfather of meringues. But if you're completely getting confused with macaroons,
oh yes,
there's macarons. French macarons look like those little pastel colored sandwiches of like round fluffy kind of
the most aesthetic tiny cream filled not biscuit.
Yeah, they're like a little perfect. They're always pastel colored and they're really cute and pretty and they just look like dainty little
they're sweet what ones. You imagine Marie Antoinette eating.
Exactly. So that's what we're talking about. They are French macarons. They look innocent, they're pastel and they're very cute and sweet, but I've mentioned underneath their smooth exteriors lies a tricky little shit that is actually very hard to conquer, and it's because there is a large part of getting a macaron right, which is the foot of the macaron.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you've got that hard sort of, well, it's not hard, I
it's
say.
Got it's got like a crispy shell. Top. Yeah.
Yeah. And then basically where you've piped that onto a tray, that rises when you're cooking and the top is all smooth and lovely, but the bit in the middle where it's risen is called the foot. So that's the foot of the macaron.
Like a snail.
Yeah, and so you sort of take that off and you would put the cream on the foot and then you would sandwich the two
to a different, so you're
together.
Putting 2 feet together.
Essentially, exactly. Yeah, so the feet are touching. And I made some homemade, I remember specifically where I was, how old I was, where I was. Yeah, I remember even the season. It was summer. Never make macarons in the dead heat of summer, especially here in humid Auckland. Humidity is like a macaron's worst nightmare.
When they just go kind of chewy.
Yes, Jamie.
Oh, no.
Yes,
the,
Jamie.
The Lacan child phrase, I just triggered.
It was utter defeat.
Some absolute trauma.
It is trauma because they take so long to prep.
Yeah.
I remember mushing the strawberry jam specifically by hand to put these with. And then I made these macarons and I thought, oh my God, I've done everything perfect. I've measured everything perfectly. And then they cooked and they just wouldn't.
Crisp.
Fucking cooperate. Yeah, they just wouldn't.
No.
And so everything I read was telling me and all of the signs of like what I was seeing on the tray, the humidity in my kitchen was next
you
level.
Can't control that.
Yeah. So I've actually never
tried
again. That's
just New Zealand.
I've actually never tried again. Like, I was like 23. I've never tried again, ever. I just was like, I've done this.
You're like me and cheesecake.
Oh, really?
Every woman in my family makes the same cheesecake recipe, and it's always incredible.
This is your nana's cheesecake?
It's my mum's cheesecake recipe, but my nana makes it.
I've had your nana's cheesecake. I've been to a family event where it was.
But my nana puts jelly on the top.
Yes, it had jelly on the top. Yeah. And I remember saying something to her about it. This was
years ago. But yeah, that's my mum's cheesecake recipe, but she doesn't put the jelly.
Delicious.
But everyone in my family makes it, and everyone makes it amazingly. I've tried to make it once for a birthday, and it's how I came up with the phrase fail cake.
Oh, no.
Because I did everything right. I was, how old was I? I was in uni. I was engaged, so I must be like 22.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Maybe it was just that year. And I pulled it out of the fridge, and it's like tin, and it looked amazing. And I was like, great, this is going so well.
Yeah.
And I clipped the thing on the side of the tin that pops it open, you know, and I lifted it up, and for 10 seconds it looked perfect. Oh. And then it just went blub, 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 and just fully collapsed everywhere.
As in, like, the sides were looking quite well done, like it was looking like a good structure.
And yeah, well, yeah, went, like, it looked like it was set, because it's not a baked cheesecake, it's a refrigerated cheesecake.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looked perfect, and it was holding, and it looked like it was supposed to look, and then it just collapsed all at once, just blunk.
Oh no.
And then it was just this large, thick puddle. And so I scooped it into dessert glasses, you know, little things. Because it was still like a nice texture. It just had no structural, like the gelatin didn't.
Yeah, okay.
And then I crumbled at the bottom and I put it on the top.
Nice.
And I was like, it's a deconstructed cheesecake mousse.
There you go. Oh my God, I'm so proud of you saving that.
But I was doing this in my tiny apartment kitchen, so everyone saw it. And I was like, guys, we're just going to save it.
There's
no hiding your kitchen failures when you're in a studio apartment.
You're literally like that open air restaurant that's all fancy and lovely, and you're doing your absolute best.
And
like,
I was just trying so hard.
Oh my God. I always get so nervous at restaurants like that. Eh? I'm always like, but what if you fuck something up? Everyone can see it.
Because the chefs have to be nice to people.
Yeah, they do. They have to be nice to their staff.
I've worked with some chefs who are truly awful people.
Yeah.
And, like, we had an open kitchen, and one of them, the chef, would still go off at people.
Damn.
And I was like, you can't do that.
It's not the best look, eh?
It was very, and, like, people would comment on it, and I was like, bro, I know. Do you know how hard it is to fire people these days? It's like,
oof. Man. Anyway,
we
digress as per usual.
Trauma dumping over.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my God. Okay, so the next tricky food I want to talk about is called Peking duck.
Uh-huh.
So mastering the art of Peking duck is like trying to find the elusive pot of gold at the end of the culinary rainbow. And I think that is so true, because while I've never ever made a Peking duck, I can so appreciate the work that must go into that. So achieving that crispy golden skin that's like perfect. It's shiny. It's smooth. It looks like wax.
It looks fake. Yeah.
Yeah. But the like flavorful, moist, kind of beautifully cooked meat and that just blend of ancient Chinese like secrets and modern kitchen wizardry. Like I just can't. Can you imagine being able to cook a bird that well?
It's like the equivalent of cooking roast pork with a really good crackling.
Yeah.
You have to get the outside super crispy, but then you want that like slightly fatty layer on the inside, and then the meat still has to be really moist.
That's it. It's such a fine art to be able to cook a piece of meat. I remember moons ago, I don't eat lamb that much actually. Like it's very, I could probably count on like both hands how many times I've eaten lamb in my life. Like I just don't eat lamb that much.
I just don't, like, obviously, you know, I don't really eat that much meat now, but I love lamb.
Yeah, lamb
I
is
really
yummy.
Enjoy lamb.
It's delicious. But I remember cooking a lamb rack for the first time. I felt so fancy, and I cooked a lamb rack. And I cooked it to utter perfection, and I swear I cut it, and I just, you know how you let lamb rest?
Yeah.
I was like gobsmacked at my own skills. I was
like
basking in the glory.
I am amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Genuinely so proud because it's a lump of meat, you know, and you don't want to fuck it up because it's not cheap. And,
yeah, it's expensive.
And I just was like blown away. So I can only imagine what it must be like to absolutely nail that process of cooking the perfect duck. I mean, it's literally bones and all. It's the whole fucking duck.
It's just the whole duck.
Yeah. And that to me seems harder than, like, I'm being serious. Like, I've got a big fucking ball of meat seems easier
a
to cook
of
than, like, a bone,
easier than
a bony
whole,
bird.
Than a sack of bones with meat around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The process involves air drying it, glazing, and roasting. And it's tricky to get just right.
Is that why they have them, like, hung up?
I think so, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, I would actually love to talk to someone who, a chef who does it. Like, I'd love to go into, like, my local store. It is near me in Massey. They always have them hanging up. And I'm always just like,
Can I interview you about your duck?
Yeah, stay tuned. If that's something you think would be interesting, let us know. And I'll see what I can rustle up the next time I'm doing my grocery shop. I'll be like, hey,
can I video you making this duck?
Please, can I just, can I learn some secrets? I don't know. I love that at the end of my notes for Peking duck, I've also written, no one wants a dry bird. What was I thinking?
No one wants a dry bird.
True, right?
It's true.
Excuse me.
Cough number two.
Cough number two. Also, I'm going to have a cup of tea too.
Have a sip of tea.
And remember, these are all things that I've, like, found online that are, like, curated as being things that are hard to make.
And if you think it's super easy to make French macarons, I love you, but sit down and be quiet.
Can you just, like, shut
Can
up?
Can you just,
like,
shush.
God's bravest soldier.
But also send us some.
Yeah.
But shush.
The last sort of, like, major one that I wanted to talk about, which I don't think will come as a surprise to anyone, is souffle.
I have never even eaten a souffle.
Neither have I. I think we need to find a souffle in Auckland,
souffle.
And we need to go and order it and eat it.
Yeah, I feel like they're one of those things that I deeply associate with reading books about, like, the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, where they're like, oh, it was a souffle.
Yeah.
And then it's gone out of fashion, probably because it's a bitch to make.
I've literally said it's the diva of the dessert world. And, like, I stand by that comment with heart and soul. Like, I've seen people making them on YouTube, which I was just like, I don't even have the patience to watch this. Like, that is...
I feel like also it's a humidity issue. I know nothing about a souffle. I've never even seen a souffle in real life.
Oh, my God.
But I feel like it's anything with a lot of air in it.
I know.
In New Zealand, if you've never been to New Zealand, it's just wet. The air is wet.
It's moist.
It's a wet heat. It's a wet cold.
Yeah. I think people forget we're a tropical island.
We're subtropical.
Like, the North Island, anyway.
Yeah. And so... In the south, you get some areas that are a bit drier,
colder,
but especially here in the North Island, it's just everything is always slightly damp.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like sort of from sort of the not just the Waikato, but I think it's kind of like Hamilton upwards, like Hamilton and north, I reckon, just gets really, it's just mucky. Like it's humid. The further north you get, like, oh my God, if you're driving up around like just Northland, it is just like... disgustingly hot, so it just can be hard to cook things
that need a certain temperature and dryness
versus like cooking it in Europe, you know.
Yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah. I said with souffle that you have to whisper sweet nothings to it while you're making it, otherwise it will shit the bed and you'll be really sad.
You know, I was like, romance it.
I know, this is what I mean. I was like, when I was writing this episode for myself, I was like, God, souffle has just got me in the dumps. Like, I'm
souffle
just depressed.
Seems like a very dramatic girlfriend
or
boyfriend.
Yeah.
They're the one that they just have awares about absolutely nothing. And they're like, my day is ruined, so your day is going to be ruined.
They command the attention of the room.
They're like, I'm making this your problem.
Exactly. My emotions are now everyone's problem.
Yes,
you know?
That is a souffle. The souffle is like, I didn't get exactly what I wanted, so I'm just going to deflate, and then what are you going to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. It is all around getting the aerated ingredients to the right. I don't know what the science is,
it's like to heat the air bubbles up so they expand, isn't it? And then it makes it big and light. but then if anything happens, the air leaves the bubbles and it goes,
and it falls
like a little sad balloon, like a little wrinkled, deflated balloon.
Exactly. That's it. And I've literally said one wrong move and your souffle dreams may deflate faster than a punctured balloon at a children's party.
Oh, so look at that. We're on the same page.
We are on the same page. Yeah, 100%. But that's it. It's like souffle. I would love, I think that's a goal for us this year, Jamie. We need to find a restaurant that's making a killer souffle. And we just need to take ourselves on a sweet little date.
A little souffle soiree.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Truly. Let's do it.
So just moving on towards the end of this epi here. But I just wanted to quickly chat about some seemingly simple foods, as I mentioned at the beginning, that can be quite tricky to make.
Mm-hmm.
Omelettes.
I can't make an omelette.
I love that. That's the first thing that comes out of me.
I can make intentional scrambled eggs. Cough number three. Or I can make unintentional scrambled eggs. Those are your options for an omelette.
Oh my god. Cracking an egg and whisking it and then pouring it into a pan and then flipping it and like making it like...
I've tried and I can't. It's not in my skill set.
It's it's a very like...
embarrassing.
No, it's so funny that you say that. I didn't even... This was so unprompted because it really is like a delicate... dance of just flipping. And I mean, some people want an omelette flipped and some people don't flip an omelette.
Really like omelettes, fair. I would like my omelette to be a boiled egg.
Fair.
I don't even want an omelette.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very specific with my eggs too, but apparently omelettes are just, yeah, you get like a rubbery mess or you can get like a really smooth, delicious kind of slightly juicy. It just depends on the ingredients. Like tomatoes can make omelets really wet.
Oh no, don't parsley put tomatoes can make in, them really... Don't put tomatoes in eggs.
I don't know. I just... Ew. No, but I've seen it done.
Yuck.
It's just, I just think it's one of those things that you're either an omelet maker
or you're not.
Or you're just not. Just not. Stick to fried eggs, man. Like,
you know, I have had, what's it, Julia Roberts movie? I think it's The Runaway Bride, where she's like, you know what? I actually don't like eggs.
Yeah.
She's like, I like eggs this one way. Because she's just been changing herself to align with a man her entire life.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had that moment with eggs. And like, it happened about 3 months ago. And I was eating a fried egg and I was like, you know what? I think we talked about it on one of our episodes. Yes. I was like, I just don't actually like fried eggs.
No.
I have decided.
It's that crispy, stringy, golden shit around the bottom of a
fried
egg.
It's just the whole concept. Like, don't like it.
Yeah.
Skin. I have decided, after much deliberation, mm-hmm. I like boiled eggs
mm-hmm.
and I like poached eggs. That is it.
Mm, okay. I mean, it's very specific, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I refuse to have a fried egg and I refuse to have a sunny side up egg. If an egg has an even inkling that it is not fully 100% cooked, I can't eat it. I can't eat anything that looks like it's got like a gelatinous mass
in it. I want it soft. I want a soft yolk, but a fully cooked white.
Mm.
I don't want a goopy white.
Eggs are such a point of like contention with people because it's very, they're fucking political. I reckon we're going to put up a poll, okay? We're going to ask you what your favorite way to have eggs is.
Because I will forget.
Because it's just next level. We're running out of time, so I'm just going to whip through the rest. Oh, what's next? Whipped cream. Yay. Ooh. Okay, so over whipping your dreamy cloud of cream into a chunky disappointment. I've done it before. I have turned my whipped cream into cheese
onto that, like, slightly
butter.
Yellow, chunky.
I've turned my whipped cream into butter and buttermilk before. And then I've even gone further and turned it into what looked like feta cheese. So I have done
Why did you keep going?
I think I just was like so far in the depths of despair that I just
if I kept going, maybe I'll get better.
I'm like, science, wow, what's going to happen next? You're like, I've already been in my own lab. Yeah,
I may as well keep going. I chose this path and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, exactly. So whipped cream can be extremely difficult to make. It's a slippery slope, guys. It's a slippery slope. And then the last one I wanted to talk about was mashed potato. And we talked about this briefly at the beginning. Mashed potato, you can either make it well or just fucking stay away. Just let someone else take over because it's just one of those things that's like universally obsessed. Like people are just people love creamy mashed potatoes.
This is one of those things where I don't understand how you make a bad mashed potato unless your potatoes are glassy to begin with, which I can kind of tell when I'm cutting them if they're going to be glassy. And I'm like, are we just not eating these?
What do you mean when you say your potatoes are glassy? What do you notice?
So glassy potatoes happen when, from memory, it's when your potatoes get frost too early. It's like a weather thing. And when my nanny used to grow potatoes and I would help her, I'm pretty sure she said it was from the frost. And it's, you notice it sometimes if the potato looks slightly green. Or it's like slightly green at one end, or it's got like a green patch.
Yes.
Yep. And then when you cut in, it's almost, it's like a little bit weird and crunchy in texture. Like the texture is not potato texture.
Okay.
It's a slightly more
glassy,
crystallized,
okay, yeah,
kind of texture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you've frozen it and thawed it out again as a raw potato.
That makes sense.
And then when you cook them, instead of doing that nice creamy mash, they go watery.
Okay.
And you get those weird kind of lumps.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't mash well. It sort of separates. And I think it's because the structure of the cell of the potato has been damaged.
Right.
And so it just doesn't seem to have the right texture. And if you do anything other than mash them, like if you just bake it, it will stay hard.
Right, right.
And so sometimes you bake a potato and you slice into it and you're like, this is kind of hard and weirdly textured.
Yeah.
But that's because you've got a glassy potato.
That's so interesting. I know exactly what you mean, but I would just call it a bad potato. Like I didn't know it was like a glassy potato.
Yeah. I don't know if this is...
It's so interesting.
Just
I love
something
it.
That my family calls it, because I said this to Tayo a while ago and he also had no idea what I was talking about.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, now I feel like I need to Google it in case this is just like a colloquial term. That
let's just ask people as well. It's like, very, have you heard of glassy potatoes?
Have you heard of glassy potato? Wait, I'm Googling it right now. No, glassy potatoes is a term.
Okay, great. Yeah, I've just never heard of it. I love it.
It means it's saying, okay, let's see if I explain this well. This is the official explanation. On cooking, so basically glassy means it's deficient in starch and glassy in appearance. And on cooking, the glassy portions turn into a slimy mass.
Okay.
Okay, it might not be frost. It says when the foliage is no longer functional, the second generation tubers draw sugars from the oldest tubers whose starch is hydrolyzed and their specific weight reduced. That means nothing to me.
It makes sense. It just means that something's not quite gone right when it's been growing up.
Basically, it's a high concentration of reducing sugars and starches.
And it just messes with the cells of the potato, I think, the young potato.
Yeah, we're all like an old potato. So by the sounds of it, if, say, the frost has killed off the leaves of your potato and it can't get nutrients from the photosynthesis, the new potatoes basically start pulling nutrients from the existing older potatoes.
Right, okay. That makes sense because they're all connected, underground.
All connected.
They're all just like a fam.
So fun fact, you've also learned about potatoes
and
today.
Glassy potatoes, yeah. I mean, I learned that for sure. I've always just thought, oh, this is a fucking shit potato, but I've never had like an actual term to put against it that there's a reason why it's like that.
Yeah. I'm glad it's not just a weird term that my family uses. It is actually a accepted normal phrase.
Yeah. I'm going to use glassy potatoes from now on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess just getting the perfect mashed potato, adding the perfect amount of like butter to your potato, or whatever you're adding to it to make it creamy and delicious. Are you a skins on or a skins off?
I don't mind. I like both.
Yeah, same. I can appreciate.
Quite often it depends what I'm putting it with.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
What kind of texture I want.
Yeah, that's something else that I think can be quite divided.
Because I did date a guy way back in the day, and his family were, I want to say, Croatian. And his mum, when she made mashed potatoes, would chop up, my throat just made a really strange noise.
I was wondering what that was.
Would chop up onions finely and cook them up and put those in the mashed potato.
Yeah, so I hope that was interesting. I certainly found it quite intriguing to like go through and just kind of like have a look at, I don't know, just like kind of world accepted like globally accepted
foods
that can be quite tricky to get like just right.
Some of those were very relatable to me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the sushi. Like, I'm just like, I don't know why I felt so seen with the sushi.
It's a tricky one. It's very tricky.
But yeah. It's, and we're going to have to find a souffle to eat.
Yeah, we need to find a souffle that's added to our list. Yeah, if there's any foods that you find very tricky that you think need to be called out for the culinary assholes they are, please let us know. You can find us on Instagram. You can send us a message, I believe, directly through Spotify now. So, yeah, hit us up, let us know, and we will see you next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.